The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening and welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio. In the studio this evening with me, I have Vicky Weston.
Hello, everybody.
And Matt Boothman.
Evening.
How are we all? Feeling good?
I'm a little tired.
A bit tired. Why are you tired, Vix?
I've been at Alice in Wonderland at Streatham Festival today.
Oh, yes, you have. It's been Alice weekend in the world of Blackshaw.
It has. We've been very busy. It's been a long, hard, very, very warm slog, but worth it. Very, very fantastic audiences. Really exciting
Lots of
shows.
Very, very excited kids.
Oh, so many in costume. Absolutely fantastic. It's just been really, really brilliant. A lot of face painting we've seen today.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
I was never a big into the face painting when I was a kid.
No.
Didn't like it.
Kids of today, they love it,
yeah.
Apparently. If
well,
today's audience was anything to go by.
There is a piece of information for you that you probably weren't expecting. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we are doing on the show this evening. We are going to be listening to a Bugsy Malone review from our lovely Helen Johnson. We're going to be hearing a piece of very live new writing that was recorded at one of our Blackshaw New Writing Nights, and we're also going to hear another piece of theatre by Hannah Pudfoot called Slow Down. But first, we are going to do this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Hey, Matt.
Evening.
What are you doing this week?
Minions.
Interesting.
So I've been to see a kids film. I've actually been to see Slow West as well this week, but
okay.
I thought that Minions actually gave me more to talk about.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. So Minions is the prequel to the two Despicable Me movies. So a quick recap of Despicable Me. It's a really weird world that they've created where there are tons and tons of supervillains always trying to do harebrained schemes to take over the world, or as the plot of the first Despicable Me is, steal the moon.
Sure.
That kind of level of supervillain plot. But there are no heroes. There are no superheroes, presumably because all the supervillains are nipping them in the bud as they are created. I've no idea. It's just like, it feels like it's a world that would be really stressful to live in as a civilian.
It would. Having seen both Despicable Me films, that sums it up really, really well.
And yet, you know, obviously they're kids' movies, so it's quite a bright and upbeat and fun seeming world. It's for the kids who dream of being the supervillains, I think. And so what this gives you is the even weirder secret origin of the minions of the main character from the Despicable Me movies, Gru, which are the little yellow creatures who speak in a kind of weird every language in the world mashup. It gives you their secret origin, where they are a tribe that has been around since the beginning of time and have always wanted to serve the biggest, most evil, bad, villainous boss from the biggest, baddest creature in the ocean when all life lived in the oceans, to T-Rex, to Napoleon. And this is, it's set in 1968 and it's about their quest for their next big supervillain boss. It's a spin-off prequel movie that takes some quite background secondary characters from the previous movies and boots them into the main character slot. So before I really get going, I just wanted to talk about other movies that have done that. So we were talking a little bit about this off air. Are there any movies like that that you think have done that particularly well or particularly badly
in the past? I think what we got, Vicky had some. I didn't have any that immediately sprung to mind, but I think we were saying that these kids' movies do it a lot, spin-off kind of sub-characters becoming main.
I couldn't think of what I would count as a kind of, not legitimate movie, but a kind of really serious movie that had done it. I feel like there might be somewhere, I just couldn't rack one out of my brain, but all the ones I could think of were a similar sort of thing, which is these comedy characters in the background, their sidekicks like Timon and Pumbaa, or Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove, who end up with their own film because actually the kids get more attached to them than they do to the main character, and that's absolutely true as far as I can tell from Despicable Me, because all of the small children I know love pretending to be minions.
Yeah.
It's like their favourite thing to do. And so the minions have obviously really like captured their imagination quite a lot more than the hero, if you will, of Despicable Me. So I think it kind of, as a movie studio, makes sense for you to try and capitalise on on that.
And you could see them doing it just through the first two movies, that the minions were very background and just a sort of background comedy gags in the first movie and actually had a role in the plot in the second movie. And now they've got their own one. Now, the example of this happening that comes to my mind usually is Pirates of the Caribbean, because the first three Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Captain Jack Sparrow is not actually the main character. He's kind of the mentor helper character who messes up the plot by double crossing everyone. But the main characters in the first three are actually Orlando Bloom's character and Keira Knightley's character. Whereas in the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie, they took those two out and made Captain Jack the main character who is actually driving the plot. And it made him and the movie really boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so bad.
Now, the minions survive the process of becoming the main characters much better than Captain Jack Sparrow does. And part of why it works is because they pick just three minions and the rest of them are in a cave somewhere waiting for these three, the expedition force, to come back with a decent boss for them to all follow. So it follows Kevin, who's kind of the leader, and Bob, who is kind of childlike and full of glee and carries his teddy everywhere, and Stuart, who is musical and also sort of ingenious and a bit devious. And so they make quite a good trio of kind of archetypes, and they have to be archetypes because they don't speak English. The idea is that they've served so many masters over the many, many millennia that they've been around that they speak a mashup of every single language in human history. So it's actually the director, Pierre Coffin, who does the voices for every minion.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So they don't speak any English?
No.
Every now and again you'll get a word that sounds like an English word.
Yeah, so sort of plot important words like boss or buddies, meaning the rest of the minions, are all kind of come out, but the rest is nonsense.
Okay, cool.
It's actually an incredible feat to have a character or several characters in a movie who don't speak the language of the viewers, because that will be true of everyone who sees this film in any language. It barely needs dubbing because, you know, the minions are speaking in nonsense language in the first place. It's actually quite an impressive feat of filmmaking, I always think,
so some of the sequences are kind of in the tradition of silent movies, that it's all very physical, that you get what's going on rather than through the dialogue. Although there is Jeffrey Rush is the narrator.
So he
narrates all the history at the beginning, so all the stuff that maybe the kids wouldn't pick up on just from the minions babbling. So the minions themselves actually survive being ushered into the spotlight quite well. The other characters, the kind of the human characters and the supervillains that populate the world of the movies, survive being demoted to secondary characters a bit less well. So the boss that they seek out in this movie is Scarlet Overkill, voiced by Sandra Bullock. And she sort of suffers weak motivation or inconsistent motivation, as far as I could tell. Like, what she wants is to steal the Queen of England's crown. But it varies from scene to scene whether she says that this is just something that is a bit of a whim. Like, oh, I feel like maybe I'll overthrow England one day. But then in other scenes, it seems like maybe that's been her childhood dream and she's trying to show everybody who was horrible to her as a child by becoming Queen of England. So her motivation's a bit iffy, and all her supervillain gadgets are cool. Like, she's got lava guns and dresses that turn into rocket ships, but they're all, her husband makes them all, which is slightly iffy in terms of the politics of it. She sort of compares poorly to, before they meet her, the minions shack up with this supervillain family, or family of bank robbers. So they're the American nuclear family, dad, mum, three kids, in a car on a road trip, and every now and then they stop and pull on knitted masks and rob banks. And they are amazing. they're the Nelsons. I would have watched an entire movie of the minions road tripping with the Nelsons and occasionally robbing banks. I think they were great. And actually Scarlet Overkill kind of suffers by that comparison, because they just do crime because they want to and it's fun, whereas the movie feels the need to give Scarlet Overkill this complex backstory of, oh, I was people laughed at me as a child, now I have to be a villain, which means that she also, and the comparison between her and Gru from the Despicable Me movies is inevitable, because you know it's got prequelitis, you know that she is not going to be their boss forever. because eventually they're going to start following Gru instead. And he had that thing in those Despicable Me movies of just being a villain for being a villain's sake. He wanted to steal the moon because who wouldn't want to steal the moon? They didn't feel the need to give him that tragic backstory, whereas they do with her. And so she suffers by all of that. She can't really measure up to any of the other characters. It's a fun movie, and it's a lot of it set in England because she wants to steal the Queen's crown. It's Queen Elizabeth because it's the 60s. And she, Queen Elizabeth herself is very good. Jennifer Saunders voices her. She elbow drops a minion in her carriage at one point.
That sounds incredible.
Of course, there's the bit that I laughed all the way through. The bit that made me really guffaw was there's a police pursuit scene. The police are chasing the minions down, and there's a police car comes towards the screen. And there's a super serious policeman in the driver's seat pouring a cup of tea out of a really fancy teapot as he drives. And it's fantastic. It's weird that the American fascination with Brit teeth comes in. Like all the animated British people have slightly overemphasized teeth.
Yeah. I've yet to find an animated British person who doesn't have overemphasized teeth. Exactly. If anyone can think of one in a cartoon, then please tweet us and tell us, because from Nigel Thornberry all the way through to that guy whose name I can't remember in Family Guy, they've always got ridiculous teeth.
Yeah, so it's the teeth and the tea.
Yeah.
And like, I can take those stereotypes.
Yeah, I think we manage.
It is a funny movie, and it is a fun movie, but I think, and the minions are good, I just think that the other characters suffer by being demoted out of the spotlight, and I think, so the minions can survive being the main characters, but the others can't survive being their support as well.
I don't understand why everyone's going mental over these things. I guess because I'm an adult, maybe that's why. But kids are going nuts.
Yeah, like, and you can get Minion everything now. Minions have really captured kids' imaginations.
Yeah,
like, so much merchandise.
I think it's a combination of they're cute.
Yeah.
And they are gleefully violent.
Yes, they are gleefully
violent.
They
love to do crime and blow stuff up.
But they also have this really good slapstick quality.
Yeah.
Like, they have this... They're like Laurel and Hardy on some kind of acid. Like, it's just, you know, like, it's all of those classic things that people enjoy watching, which is, you know, silly things happening and, you know, capers and japes and things like that. And it's just kind of on steroids because it's tiny yellow people in dungarees.
There is quite a good scene, which I think bits of it are in the trailer, so it's not too much of a spoiler, where Scarlett Overkill's husband, who's voiced by John Hamm, he's very good, tries to torture the minions in a Tower of London torture chamber, and they just love it.
Yeah, I think it's like
they
a
just
playground.
Have, they just have fun with it, which I think that is the appeal.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thanks for that, Matt. You have actually researched what you're going to be doing for the next
couple of
weeks.
Yeah, I didn't want to be blindsided by the question like I usually am.
Sorry.
So what's coming out in the next... Well, what's already out is Terminator Genisys and Magic Mike XXL. They are possibilities. They'll still be in the cinema for the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
There's also Amy, the Amy Winehouse documentary
really want to see that.
By the makers of Senna, which that got plaudits. I'm sure Amy will as well.
Yeah.
And then coming out in the next couple of weeks, there's Ted 2. I haven't seen Ted 1, so I don't know. Could be interesting.
Yeah, no.
And there's a movie called Self/Less, which is kind of a sci-fi thing about identity. So there I've got options. We'll see what...
Yeah.
And then the following show will definitely be Ant-Man.
Oh, yes.
I'm so excited for Ant-Man.
We had that conversation about Ant-Man.
We did, yeah. I completely messed up the dates last week. But yeah, the show after next, I'll be reviewing Ant-Man.
I will see Ant-Man for you.
I will see Ant-Man also. We're going to have such a productive conversation about Ant-Man. I'm excited.
It's going to be interesting. Coming up on the show, I'm going to play a New Writing Night piece that we recorded at the last New Writing Night at the Selkirk in Tooting. Our New Writing Nights are on... Every couple of months, is that correct?
Every other month.
Yeah.
And it's the last Wednesday of the month for the rest of the year.
The one coming up most soon is on the 29th of July at the Horse in Lambeth North at 7:30. So come along to that and you'll hear something kind of like this next piece that you're about to hear. It has been written by Dan Weatherer, directed by Catherine Lord, and the part of Milton is played by Richard Mulado, and the part of Gail is played by Hayley Marie Axe.
Sunset. A sparse chair, a side table, and of course a telephone. Milton is standing behind the chair. He is holding a blood-soaked kitchen knife, and his shirt and face is splashed with blood. Gail is sitting on the sofa. As soon as the lights come up, she steps on her side. Milton turns and looks at Gail.
Did it? Didn't see that one coming, did you? Miss High and Mighty, Miss Know-It-All! Not the way. We know what they do to you in prison. You'll be passed around like currency.
Milton pulls up his t-shirt.
There's only one way. One thing to do, old buddy.
And as he pulls up his t-shirt, he places the tip of a blade against his skin.
Come on now. Just like a samurai!
You mind telling me just what the hell that was all about?
Gail?
You've only got a damn it this time, haven't you?
Gail?
Don't you Gail me. Just what the hell are you playing? I'm sitting here watching telly, not doing anything to anyone, and then along you come and...
You're supposed to be dead!
What I'm supposed to do. I'll decide that. We've had words about this before.
I stabbed you.
I know. 7 times. In the back of my eye, some man you are.
I checked your pulse.
Did you really think I was going to let you kill me and not have my say about it?
You really don't know me at all, do you, Milton Moore?
Don't you look at me in that tone. Oi! You keep your hands to yourself. Don't you get any ideas about having your way with me now?
Good woman, what do you think I am?
Well, I thought I knew. After tonight's antics, you really surprised me. Come on, then.
Out with what?
Why you did it? What have I done to warrant this then? I mean, I know at the end of all this, it'll be your fault, but you know, let's hear it anyway.
I thought you were having an affair.
How? I haven't got time to have an affair. I'm spending all my time busy cleaning up after you.
I thought you were having one online. You're always in those chat rooms, talking to people. I see you smirking to yourself when you read something you like. I think you were going to meet up with one of your mystery men and leave me.
Not bloody likely. The internet's full of weirdos.
So what were you doing?
I was bored, okay? You never talked to me, it was just a bit of fun.
How many were there?
Just one.
Did you send in? You know, into the photos.
I did, yeah. actually.
Oh, my God! I knew it! I bloody knew it!
They weren't at me, though.
What do you mean? They weren't at me, were they? I mean, there's also fruit cakes on the internet.
Oh, get over yourself. They weren't at you. I'm not sure who they were. I just found them online. I mean, I wasn't going to go to all the effort of tidying myself up for some weirdo we need.
Then what about all those different colognes I've been spending on?
Well, I told you, male fragrances are much cheaper than female these days. I was trying to save you money, and yet I'm in the wrong again.
So you weren't having an affair?
No.
Oh.
Oh, indeed. See? I said it would be your fault, was I right? Was I ever?
Yes, you were.
So you killed me over your misinterpretation of the facts?
Yes, but...
Don't you think a conversation would have been more appropriate instead of some overtly grand and, in my case, fatal gesture?
Yes, but...
Why didn't you? I mean, I'm always saying to you...
Because I can never get a word in.
Well, then there's no point interrupting, is there?
No, it's not. Seppuku.
Seppu what?
It means stomach cutting. It's the way of a dishonored samurai who commits suicide.
Give me strength.
Only I couldn't do it.
Why not?
I can't. You know I have a deep-rooted fear of hell.
Where do you think Butcher and me is going to get you? Why do you already punch that ticket? I tell you what. Give my dad a call. He'll be straight round to do it for you when you tell him what you've done.
Oh, yeah. I wondered how long it would be until you brought Dad.
I was merely offering his help. You haven't the stones to offer yourself, so let him do it for you.
Because, of course, he'd do a much better job of it than I would, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Do you want his number?
No.
07.
I'm not calling your father.
Of course you aren't. You're intimidated by him.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. You are intimidated by him because he's a man's man. He knows things that men should know and you don't.
So he fixed our boiler that one time. Doesn't qualify him as an expert in all things, does it? Besides, he must be lacking. He must be definitely lacking something for your mother to leave.
What did you just say?
Nothing. Didn't say anything. It's the blood in all your ears.
Yeah, you saw that.
So we're back to blame again, are we?
Yes, we are back to blame again. Let me ask you this question. Have I murdered you lately?
No.
Sorry, what was that?
No.
Well, as murder seems to be the hot topic tonight, and I'm the only one lying dead, I apportion as much blame as I see fit. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So now what?
I don't know.
Well, you can forget about dismembering me in the bathtub and leaving me out in the bin then. I look terrible in black.
Oh, I wasn't planning to. I remember Artley's funeral. I've never seen PVC stretch so far as to become transparent.
Oh, bloody cheek. That cost you £350. So, what now? That's always been your problem. No foresight. You fail to plan.
You plan to fail.
Yes, yes, Sonno.
It's a bloody good job you never gave me any kids. They'd be mortified to find out their daddy was capable of exoricide.
Huh?
It means the act of stabbing your wife with a kitchen knife.
Oh. Oh, why do you have to bring in my weak swimmers into this, eh? I told you! It's the stress of work that does it. It's not my fault. I always wanted children.
Well, so did I. But you couldn't even manage that. And don't put brilliant work into this again. I suppose you never even gave your work a second thought in all of this. I mean, think of all the press attention you're going to bring as a foremost supplier of kitchen utensils. Hardly. Hardly going to bring them the sort of attention they want. See? Only thinking of yourself. Typical Milton. All self, self, self.
I don't care. They never valued me. I'm middle management. Strike one down, and there are two more already to take their place. I won't be released.
Well, you should care. You'll need a good reference of them when you get out. If you get out.
Out?
A jail.
I'm not going to jail. This was a crime of passion!
Passion? I get it first.
It was. Misinformed though I was, I killed you. So nobody else could have you.
Oh. Oh, you're very thoughtful. It's a pity I didn't get to say the matter.
Besides, nobody knows you're dead. Not yet. I can still hide your body. You just shut up long enough to let me think!
And let me get this straight. So you want me to hold my tongue whilst you think of a way to dispose of my remains?
If you would, please.
How about acid? Or lime?
Not sure where to get that from, this hour.
You could burn me.
It's raining now. Look, can you just shut up so I can...
I was only trying to help.
Did it hurt? Well, you know, I got all stabby.
Bloody hell, what is this? 20 questions?
I just always wonder. That's all. I just...
Okay. Kind of like the colour beige.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much covered it. Starting to smell, aren't I?
Just a little.
Perhaps you should make that call.
I give myself up.
Yeah, why not? First offence, crime of passion and all that. You'll probably get off with a fine in this day and morning, telling you not to do it again.
You think so?
These days, things like this are brushed under the carpet all the time.
You might be right.
I am right. I'm always right. The way I've been prattling on tonight, I bet I had it coming anyway.
Yes, yes, you did. You so did.
So make the call. Let's end this now. Get me all cleaned up and embalmed. As soon as this is dealt with, the sooner you can crack on with your bachelor lifestyle. Besides which, I'm getting bored now anyway. I can hear Aunt Hetty calling from beyond the veil. Something about securing a badminton court, but only for the next half hour. Oh God, I love badminton. Looks like I am headed to hell after all.
Okay. I'll do it! Hello? Yes. Police, please. And an ambulance. Wait. Do ambulances take dead bodies? Okay. No. She's gone. What happened? I stabbed her! No, sorry, my mistake. Seven. It was seven. I forgot the one to the neck. Yes. Yes, it was my wife. How did you guess? Wait. Have you met my wife before?
That was Beige, written by Dan Wetherer and directed by Catherine Lord, acted by Richard Millardo and Hayley Marie Axe, and that was performed at Blackshaw's last New Writing Night at the Selkirk in Tooting. Now, next up on the show is our arts thing of the week, and Vicky's in the studio this week, so
yes,
it's a live one.
I'm excited.
In terms of arts things, guys, doing any arts things? What have you done, Matt?
I saw An Oak Tree, the 10-year revival of Tim Crouch's An Oak Tree.
I just imagined you standing on a street just looking at a tree.
I thought I'd better qualify that, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the 10-year revival of Tim Crouch's An Oak Tree at the National Theatre in the Temporary Theatre, what used to be called The Shed.
Oh, yeah. Is that the big red one?
It is the big red one.
Oh,
correct.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting show about how theatre makes things into other things, and how hypnotists do the same thing. Where you can say, I, the actor, am now a hypnotist, and you just are, and this oak tree is now my dead daughter, and it just is.
Uh-huh.
Highly recommended. I'm not sure how much longer it's running, and it may be sold out.
Okay.
But if you can get tickets, get them, because it's a really good show.
Oh, fantastic. Vicky, what are we doing this week? What are we focusing on?
We're talking about something that's not on at the moment. Actually, normally I talk about something that's kind of happening in the moment, but this week it's something that that's just been announced, and there's been quite a lot of rumour about it, and it is the play Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Ooh.
Yeah,
exciting.
It is very exciting. And I think we can assume that for all Harry Potter fans, this is, a pretty thrilling piece of information, because J.K. Rowling is very much involved. This is not some kind of spin-off where someone's bought the rights and gone to town on some kind of crazy Harry Potter thing, because J.K. Rowling is actually very protective of the story and the characters, as you might imagine. So she's been taken to Twitter to debunk some of the myths and rumours that we've heard about this production, but also to kind of trail a little bit of information and to really kind of build people's excitement. So you may have read something about this already or heard about it already. And it's opening in summer 2016 in London's West End. I imagine if it's successful, it will receive a Broadway transfer in a matter of months, because I imagine everyone's going to be clamouring for this production. Yes, as I said, it's Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. There's been a bit of controversy, mainly around whether or not this play is a prequel to the series. We think the rumour came from the Daily Mail originally.
As far as Matt can tell. Baz Bamigboy, who's the theatre critic in the Daily Mail, seems to be the first person to have said this is going to be about Harry's parents. And that seems to be where all the idea that it is a prequel has come from.
I just don't understand how he drew that conclusion, because
he just made it up, though.
Yeah.
He definitely just made that up.
Because if it's called Harry Potter and the assumption is, guys, that Harry Potter features quite heavily in this storyline. I just feel like that's a logical conclusion to make here.
Yeah.
And I want to point out to him that Harry Potter does not live for a very long time before his parents bite the dust. So, quite frankly, unless it's Harry in a nappy for the duration, talking of kids on stage, as we were earlier.
Maybe he thinks that it's going to be focusing around the Order and that. If it's a prequel, that would be my...
I feel like that's a natural option, is to do something to do with the work of the Order of the Phoenix,
yeah.
And something to do with the kinds of situations they might get themselves into that would be story-worthy. We're obviously not quite sure how it's going to work exactly. J.K. Rowling has said it categorically is not a prequel. that's all we know, really. It's not a prequel.
But she's also tweeted about it, like that, a variation on that it's not a prequel sentence about 1,500 times.
It's because people won't stop reporting that it's a prequel.
She must get so annoyed.
Someone actually tweeted her to say, do you want me to take over telling people it's not a prequel for you for a while? And she was like, yes, thank you very much. That would be excellent. So obviously all the Potterheads are going around tweeting people to tell them it's not a prequel because it's not a prequel. She's also said, and again, this is directly from J.K. Rowling via Twitter, that she's not revealing anything else about what it is, but that obviously people are asking the question, why not another novel? And she felt that this works better, and she believes that once audiences see it, that they will also agree that it works better as a play than as a book, which is actually a bit fascinating for somebody that's famous for writing a series of books that had a series of films adapted from them, to say, actually, now what we've got is something that's only suitable for theatre, is a really kind of crazy side shift into a really different genre that does a really different thing.
Harry Potter's just taking over all media.
All media.
Been on the radio yet?
Almost definitely. There must
We're
be
We're all going
kind
to be
of...
Harry Potter characters by 2016.
Yeah, everyone in the world will have an assigned Harry Potter character and house that they belong to. It's just, you know, so it's just a really interesting thing. And I was trying to think of examples of times where this has been done before. And I could think of examples of times when a book has been made into a film that's then become a play or musical, which they did with Lord of the Rings.
Mm. Yeah, and His Dark Materials.
And His Dark
as well.
Materials. To varying degrees of success, I'll put it out there. Some the film better than the play, some the play better than the film. And I think that's to do with how well the subject matter lends itself to the different options that they have. And then, of course, the vice versa, which is a book that's been adapted into a play first and then into a film, like Les Miserables, which actually I think is pretty successful in both genres. But I couldn't think of one where it's not a straight adaptation, but an additional unique story adding to the canon.
From a book, yeah.
I can, but it's blowing my own trumpet a little bit.
Oh, yeah, this is true. Yeah.
So Audience with the Ghost Finder, which is a play I wrote, which is an original story based on some stories written by William Hope Hodgson.
Oh, my God, that's the perfect
one. That is
one.
A good example. I can't believe
how
it
is. How do we not think of that?
It's not been a film, though.
It's not been a film. And it's not important, though. That's not important, because it's a new story that you're adding in a totally different format to how those original stories were told. And so, yeah, I just thought we could... I've got a bit more information about the show, but I think it would be way more fun to speculate about what Harry Potter and the hashtag cursed child.
What is hashtag cursed child? That's the first thing that we need to
exactly.
figure out.
So who will the cursed child be? Is it a character we already know
Maybe
of?
Maybe it's Harry Potter's child.
Maybe it's Harry Potter's child.
Maybe he's cursed by something.
So my theory on this is that it's Teddy Lupin.
Interesting.
Who's that?
So that's Remus Lupin and Nymphadora Tonks' son.
Yes.
Who is, I can't remember who he's adopted by.
It's
spoiler,
kind of,
they both die.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. If you haven't read the Harry Potter books, now would be a great time to tune out. And also, what rock have you been living under for the last sort of 15 years. But anyway, he's their son, and they die at the Battle of Hogwarts, and he is a baby, babe in arms at the time. And there is a very fleeting reference to him in that last chapter in the last book about kind of being an adult. And
if he's inherited any werewolf stuff, that would make him a cursed child, I guess.
It would make him a cursed child, yeah. So that's a definite potential genetic thing.
I don't know how werewolves work in Harry Potter.
It's not the
is
laws
hereditary.
Not, the law's not well explained, actually. He gets bitten, is a werewolf, is all you know about Remus Lupin, really, and the way that werewolves work. Hermione Granger probably knows the answer to this question, but she's not in the studio with us today.
She was here right now.
If you're listening, Hermione Granger.
Yeah, please tweet us to tell us about whether or not you can inherit werewolf qualities from your really awesome dad.
At Blackshore Update.
Thank you very much. Yeah, have we got any other thoughts on what might feature? Whether, I'm kind of interested by the idea of whether Harry's going to be a child or a teenager, as we've been used to seeing him, or if we're going to get grown-up Harry.
Yeah.
Quite an interesting shift.
Imagine if it was Daniel Radcliffe in the play.
I think that's one of the few things we know, is that none of the movie cast are coming to the stage.
Oh, yeah. That's upsetting.
Yeah, it is a bit upsetting, because he kind of is, like, more of a right age now to do...
Yeah, Dad
grown-up Harry. Grown-up Dad Harry.
Dad Harry.
I feel like if we really demand it enough, it may happen. It would also, you know, I wonder what they'll do in terms of casting, whether they'll be looking for, I mean, how are they going to find any British actors that weren't in the films is kind of beyond me, because I'm pretty sure they all were. So
we've got some Blackshaw people.
Yeah, I feel like
put their hands straight up.
I feel like it might have to be unknowns rather than well-knowns, but it could be. If Snape's going to be in it and it's not Alan Rickman, I'm probably not going to go and see it.
No, that's not worth it. That's not worth it.
But I assume to some extent it's not set at Hogwarts, because actually for the duration of Harry's stay there, we chart his entire set of terms every single year.
So unless he's a sort of peripheral character in it, and it's somebody else's story with him in the background, like we were talking about earlier, bringing it back to main characters becoming background.
It would be pretty good if Teddy Leavitt, because he's an incredible background character, because you feel quite passionately about this kid because you're so connected to his parents, but you don't really, like, you don't know him because he's a baby.
He's a tiny, baby.
And then you hear about him as an adult and you really care. Well, I did when I read it. I really cared because I was so connected to his parents through the book. So actually, he would be an incredible peripheral character to bring in as a protagonist. Let's hope for that, I think.
I think following on from this conversation, we're going to talk a little bit more after we listen to this review by Helen Johnson. It's a review of Bugsy Malone. And obviously, Bugsy Malone is a film that has been, you know, put onto the stage now, and it's all kids. So I have a feeling Harry Potter, there'll be a lot of kids acting in that. So we'll continue this conversation after listening to Helen Johnson.
Hello, Blackshaw Arts Hour. I have a guilty secret. I have never actually seen some of the biggest musicals of all time, West Side Story, The Sound of Music, and plenty more. I can now happily tick Bugsy Malone off that list. For those harbouring the same guilt, the story of Bugsy is a typical 1920s gangster plot set in Chicago, with two significant twists. It's a musical, and it's performed entirely by kids. If that's not enough to garner a wry smile, then the high energy, quirky staging and terrific performances of this production should get you keen to catch the show while you can. The kids sing their socks off, the accents are terrific, if hilarious, and you're bound to leave with a huge smile on your face after a fab couple of hours in the company of this bunch. Also, what they have up their sleeve at the end of the show knocks Marvel's end of credit sequences out of the park. Sorry, Matt. Bugsy Malone is running at the Lyric Hammersmith until the 5th of September, and there are £15 day tickets available. I strongly suggest that you get down there.
That was Helen Johnson talking to us about Bugsy Malone, which she saw recently. And the conversation surrounding this I'm interested to have with you guys is kids on stage, which I just think is the cutest thing in the world. And I loved Bugsy Malone as the film. I watched it loads when I was a kid. And I actually really want to go and see this stage show, but I can't wrap my head around. I can sort of get how kids act in films, because, you know, it's not really, they can take time out. They're not on a stage. I can't get my head around how you can have kids on a stage. Like, how do you, logistically, how do you even begin that rehearsal process? Like, what?
So I don't know a lot about this production, but I imagine they have rotating cast members.
In the vein of Matilda.
Yeah, that's normal for kids in musicals.
And Billy Elliot was five kids,
at least for the leads who have to be on stage a lot.
Yeah.
They don't make them do two shows in a row.
No. Mm. I think it's quite common that even in, for example, Les Mis, for characters like Cosette, who, for when she's a child, she's only on sort of stage for one scene, but they still have three little girls and they rotate through them so that they're only at the theatre two nights a week.
Yeah.
Which actually, in the grand scheme of things, isn't a huge amount. Although obviously it's way more than like the average child spends at work when they're only 9 years old.
Yeah.
So it is it's an incredibly unusual life for kids to have. But I mean, for the kids that are really gifted and want to make a career out of it, it's obviously a great way for them to start getting that experience.
Yeah.
It is incredible. Idea of doing a whole show. I mean, Matilda and Billy Elliot in themselves were quite special because that was making the child the main character.
Mm.
And obviously Matilda's got a lot of kids in it, but Bugsy Malone is something else really in terms of numbers.
I think Helen was saying that, correct me if I'll tweet us if I'm wrong, audience, that I think the oldest age of the cast is 24, and anyone that's over, say, 18, 19 looks like a child anyway, so it's sort of keeping that that whole vein running through it. But yeah, just incredible.
I think one of the it's one of the nice things about theatre is that it is one of those jobs that you want that some children actually want to do.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see children taking time out from school to do accounting, but there are children who want and are passionate about wanting to take time out of school to be on the stage or to be in movies or an act, which is
a lot of them do come from theatre schools or from schools that have their performance element built in, so the school is then affords them a bit more flexibility on the basis that they have to still get the study hours in. And you know, as a kid doing performance stuff, and I did a lot of performance stuff as a kid, but obviously never on the West End stage, because I'm not that good. But mainly you spend a lot of your weekends and your evenings doing countless rehearsals and performances, and you just accept that, you know, if you're going to have to get your schoolwork done at a different time to get it done, that you'll do it because you want, as Matt says, you want to be doing that job and you're passionate about performing.
I find it incredible. I mean, I can't even remember what I have to say on this show, and I don't understand how a 10-year-old can remember lines in a stage production. Like, what's going on with that?
Do you think it's easier to remember lines when it's a song? When there's rhyme and there's tune to give you a hand?
Probably for kids, definitely. Yeah. That would make a huge difference. Yeah. And the songs in Bugsy Malone are so catchy.
They are so catchy. I love Bugsy Malone. It's great. It's a great fun show. Like, for kids, it's just a joyful show to be a part of. I've never done the whole show, but I did bits of it when I was at school, and it is like everything about it is fun. The choreography's fun. The songs are fun. Throwing stuff at each other is fun. Pretending to be gangsters is fun. Everything's fun.
I wonder if they do the cream pie fight on the stage.
Yeah, with the guns that squirt like foamy nonsense, and
it's cream.
Yeah, it's just all the crap, isn't it? So yeah, perfect.
Well, yes. On going on from that, go and see Bugsy Malone. It sounds awesome. I'm going to try and go and see it. We had a conversation actually off air, and I was asking my co-hosts what a great thing. I've got an Australian friend visiting tomorrow, and we were talking about what probably the most quintessential, excellent theatre thing to do in London would be. And I think we decided on the Globe. I think I'm going to go to the Globe this week.
Yeah, I think because we talked about there's West End shows that are good to see and that everybody can enjoy if you can get cheap enough tickets for them. And there are fringe theatres that are good and that are a bit more of a risk, but also a bit cheaper, and you can sort of have dinner afterwards and that kind of thing. But yeah, the Globe is always a good bet, I think. And they're doing As You Like It at the moment, and
Measure for Measure.
And Measure for Measure.
Yeah, which are both good, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to start Richard II soon, but I don't think that'll be in time for your trip.
Yeah, I would say go for a comedy anyway. I think it will probably be more enjoyable.
Especially when we're doing £5 standing.
Yeah, especially when we're doing £5 standing. Try and get really close to the stage, and then you have something to lean on. If you get a bit tired.
Yes.
And then you can really be like the peasants that would have stood right at the front for actual
heckling
Shakespeare.
And throwing veg.
Yeah. I love feeling like a peasant.
It's good authenticity, because also you're wrapping up theatre and history into one experience. So
that's
quite good.
Nice little package.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Well, moving on, we are going to play some more theatre for you. This is a piece called Slow Down. It was written and it's written and performed by Hannah Pudfoot, and is a reflection on the pace of life and the ever-changing world around us.
If I was young, if I could still skip, if I could sing in tune, if I were 23 again, if I were me again, if I could be again, like I was before, then perhaps I wouldn't see them staring anymore. There was a time, not so very long ago, when a pint of milk was 17 pence. You got cream in the neck when you knocked the top off, and someone collected the bottles from your doorstep on a weekday. Now there are 11 different kinds of milk in my local supermarket. I counted. Full fat, semi-skimmed, skimmed, 1% rice milk, cow's milk, bean milk and dairy milk. All of them in one place with different prices and different colours and all this noise and people pushing. I mean, who in their right mind would put all the milk in metal trays on the floor so you can't reach to the back without bending in half and make some so heavy you can barely lift them, let alone put one in a basket? And before you say it, I don't need a trolley. I don't have enough items to purchase to warrant a trolley, and if I did get a trolley, I'd have to remember the pound coin to collect one. Because nowadays they're all chained to railings like protesters outside an animal testing facility due to the fact that they get stolen by teenagers who need to carry televisions home from looting. I just can't be doing with it. And once you've chosen from the 11 kinds of milk and managed to get it in your basket without dislocating anything, and you've made another choice over the 46 different brands, sizes and prices of bread, some of which aren't even real bread because they're made of sawdust to accommodate the gluten-free, nut-allergy, lactose-intolerant, bi-monthly asthmatic, semi-contagious human beings who collect disabilities like a cheap remedy for actually having to deal with life, you then have to tackle the checkouts, with simpering, dim-witted 13-year-olds glaring at you as you find the exact change whilst you try not to glance repeatedly at their deep-set, sunken eyes, seeing the question forming in the backs of their brains, just as it's forming in the minds of the 1, 2, 3,000 people arranging themselves in an irritably ordered queue behind you, staring and thinking the immortal and obvious question, why, for the love of God, doesn't she have a contactless credit card? And I suppose that's the world we live in. My mother used to say that to me when I was a child. Just accept the world for what it is and remember that no matter what happens, it'll keep on spinning just the same tomorrow. Actually, it's not the milk or the bread or the queues. It's other people having to wait for me. That's the problem. I would be all right if they were patient and they were able to give me a few minutes to gather myself, get my thoughts together, remember where I am, what I'm doing, what I've bought, how much it was, where I'm going, whether I bought the car, whether the bags will keep everything in or whether I need another one, whether I had my scarf when I left the house, how I pay, how much it was, where I'm going, what I'm doing. Where am I? If I was 23 and it took me a while to get my purse open, and it took me a while to work out how much I owe, because I've never ever been good at maths, if I was 23 and I could laugh it off, make a joke, roll my eyes irritably at myself and the queue behind me, would laugh along and I'd skip out of the supermarket with my bags and I'd carry on with my life because I'd remember what my life was. If I'd broken my leg and I was in front of someone at the zebra crossing, they would see the crutches and they would walk a little slower, give me a wide berth. They wouldn't expect me to run across the road screaming, "I'm all right again! Look how fast I can go!" They'd wait. Because my leg would quite clearly be broken. But somehow when you're old, which is going to happen to everyone, if you're lucky, there isn't an inherent patience in strangers. Some of us, certainly not all of us, but some have real problems with the everyday. There's no crutches. There's no badge reading tired brain on board. People just look at you and struggle and roll their eyes and suddenly you're to blame. You're to blame for growing old and slowing down the pace of the world.
That was Slow Down, written and performed by Hannah Pudfoot. The sound of that was done by Ian Ward. Now, we are coming very quickly to the end of our show. We have been talking about some interesting things, and we've got something pretty cool in the pipeline at the moment for the Blackshaw Arts Hour and Blackshaw as a company. We are going to be producing and recording an adaptation of Great Expectations for the radio.
Speaking of things that have been adapted into loads of different stuff, that is a great example.
Yeah, it's a big theme on the show this week. On the show this week, that is, in fact, our 19th show. So on our 19th show, I am announcing that we are going to be producing Great Expectations for the radio. It's going to come in little short, sharp parts, and it's going to be wonderfully, magically sounded up by our very talented Andy Crane, who is so excited about creating soundscapes.
I'm really excited to start listening.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, really good.
It's going to be fantastic. And in terms of what's coming up for Blackshaw as a theatre company, Vix?
So you've already mentioned the new writing night on the 29th of July. You have just about still got time to submit. If you haven't already and you've been thinking about it, please, please do go ahead. We will take any kind of writing as long as it's new. and we will be releasing the information about who's been selected, I think a week week tomorrow.
So the submission details are all on blackshoreonline.com?
Blackshoreonline.com is exactly where they are, /NWN at the end, and you will get taken straight to the page. And then the other thing is that we are, of course, having our run of Staying Alive at the Pleasance in November, and it seems like a long way away, and it is, but tickets will be on sale soon, so more information about that in future shows.
Book something in, have it to look forward to.
Very exactly. Exciting. Yeah,
November's cold, it's starting to get cold, you want something fun in there.
You want warm theatre places to go to, and yes, we're going to provide you with them.
Well, thank you so much for being in the studio once again with me, Matt. Matt's going to be doing Ant-Man in 2 weeks' time, which we are very excited about.
And a surprise show next time.
Yeah. And Vix, thank you very much for joining me. We will be with you in a fortnight. Coming up next on Wandsworth Radio is Chris Kirsty with an hour of fun comedy sounds for you. So have a fantastic week, and we'll see you soon.